Welcome to the My House Podcast, a show about the past, present, and future goings-on at the My House Youth Drop-In Center in Wasilla, Alaska, with your host, Michelle Overstreet.
Hi, welcome to episode 28 of the My House Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Overstreet, and today I'm joined by Roger Hammaker from Nine Star. Thank you for being here, Roger.
I'm happy to be back.
I'm happy to have you back.
You may remember me from like episode 10 or
episode
something.
Episode 10.
Yeah, episode
Roger,
10.
Roger Hammaker June. Of the Roger and Gene Talk About Movies podcast.
Oh, it's so great.
Find it wherever you get your podcast.
That is
yes,
true.
Yes, and don't miss the podcast on Cocaine Bear because it's so awesome.
All right. Thanks for the plug.
Yeah. Isaac, do you have any housekeeping for us?
Well, so we just finished our community advisory board meeting. That was today. That was kind of the big event that we just had. I'm trying to think about what the next one will be. It might be golf tournament that it's our next big organizational event, right?
I think that's the biggest organizational event.
Yeah, and that's July, I want to say 21st. It's late July. So the website should be up shortly. You can be tuned to our social media for that. On the podcast side of things, let me run down the list. We're recording this right after the community advisory board, so my brain is all over the place. But Redemption finished season 2. They're on a little bit of a hiatus. My Voice will have an episode coming out, I believe, next Friday. Diag Nonsense just dropped the year 1 extravaganza that I edited while Michelle and I were stuck on the tarmac in Seattle. And getting back from Juneau, why were we in Seattle flying back from Juneau? I couldn't tell you either.
Good question.
That's out, and there'll be another Diag Nonsense episode coming out shortly as well. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Very good. Very good. Thank you for that. Roger, we just had a couple of podcasts in a row talking about what makes My House different. And that was one of the things that came up in the wake of the Murdoch Foundation video that we watched in the meeting. It's been posted on our Facebook page and it's really kind of a nice shout out about word innovation, doing things in an innovative way. And I talk about Nine Star probably just about every day because I really think that if more organizations had the cohesive relationship that we have with you, it changes the way that we offer services and makes our service array more complete. What do you think makes My House different?
Well, what makes My House different? The idea of nonprofits, right, is you have your mission statement and then you create services that are true to your mission. And Michelle, you and I know, and I'm sure a lot of in the community know, that there's a lot of nonprofits that try to do more than their original mission actually is. And so, for example, the Nine Star mission is to help Alaskans get a job, keep a job, and advance on the job. That's all we do. When that kid comes to me and they're homeless, I'm not helping them not be homeless. I'm hooking them up with an organization like My House, whose mission is to end homelessness, you know, get the kid off the street, get him into housing, so we then can work on what our primary focus is, which is to get that kid employed or educated for employment. And, you know, like the My House model, why does it work? Well, that kid comes in with an active opiate addiction problem. You're not expending your resources trying to recreate the wheel. You went out and found a partner who does opiate addiction treatment, you know,
yes.
True North Recovery or Set Free Alaska. And so why My House works so well is this collection of partners with a like-minded idea to making these youth successful within the framework of their own mission. I am never going to house anyone. I'm never going to provide drug treatment for anyone or mental health treatment for anyone, but I am going to partner with the professionals that do that. And as a nonprofit or even a for-profit, you know, you don't have the car company selling tacos in their thing, right? You stay focused on what you're good at and what your mission is. Mm-hmm. And that provides for a greater sharing of resources and a lack of competition around what we're ultimately trying to do, which is to make these young people successful. And so, again, that's why the My House model works. You went into it saying, hey, I want to have job training. I want to have kids being able to get their drug treatment needs addressed, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to house them so all these other doors can start to open. Who are the partners? Who are the professionals that do that? And I'm going to partner with them. And that's why My House is such a great organization.
I love it. I love it. And I think, you know, I had two thoughts when you were talking. One of the things that I think makes that hard for some organizations is ego. The, you know, we hear people say things like, you know, we don't really collaborate. You know, we have a different perspective on that in the community. But when you don't collaborate, you miss out on a whole segment of the population mm-hmm. because we, in return, get clients from all of those partnerships. I can't tell you the number of times True North Recovery has brought clients that were theirs in for clothing mm-hmm. or for continued housing. They complete a program with them. They've been in sober housing. They need to transition to transitional housing without the sobriety supports just to see if they can do it. You know, next steps, and they call us.
Right. And I think when you step outside of what your original mission is, all that you end up really doing is diluting the very mission you tried to do. We, Michelle, you and I both know of nonprofits out there that, oh, we're going to shelter people, but now we're also going to provide job services for people. Oh, and we're also going to add drug treatment services. Oh, and then suddenly they're out of business because they've stretched themselves too thin and they're outside of what their professional is. You know, their Nine Star, like I said, is never going to be the drug treatment place. We're only employment and education. And we've always stayed true to that mission. And all funding that comes into us is specifically for that mission. I'm not adding extra staff because we need some mental health counselor. I'm partnering with somebody else to do that. And I think the nonprofits that are successful are the nonprofits that when an organization like My House or Nine Star calls them and says, hey, we need help with this particular issue that you guys do, their answer is, yes, we can help you, right?
Yes,
you
know? Yes. We want the yes, right? Yeah. We look for the yeses.
Not to say that wraparound services aren't important either, because, you know, we do more than just housing for homeless youth, right? We have the job training part and some of those pieces around, but when you have in the community like Roger, like Nine Star, like TNR that is already doing it, that's set up to do that one thing, then, yeah, like you said, Michelle, sometimes nonprofits, I think, can be a little hesitant to reach out and take that next step and just bring on someone that already, like you said, Roger, has the funding, is doing it, has a support network. And that's where we get into, like, the continuum of care stuff that we talk about in kind of those 30,000-foot meetings with all of our community partners.
Right. And I think one of the things that's interesting when we go into those meetings, we had a strategic planning session about a year ago where there was a consultant who drew a circle on the board and wrote housing in the middle of it and said, well, what else do you need to end homelessness? And my response was an exit plan. Mm-hmm. Every client needs an exit plan. And his response was, I'm not familiar with that term. I don't know what that means. And I said, that means everybody needs to have a treatment plan where they are moving toward exiting homelessness, whatever that looks like for them. Some people need permanent supported housing. Some people need drug treatment. Whatever that looks like, they need to have something to look forward to and an exit plan. And he really struggled with that, and the whole group that hosted that project really struggled with that. And they kept saying, well, you know, you don't do that. And I said, well, I don't have to do that. I have a partner that does that. Mm-hmm. I can call someone who can do that. I don't need a nurse practitioner in my building full time because I have public health coming twice a week. And these two ladies are making relationships with our clients that allow them to ask difficult questions and address health concerns that maybe they wouldn't address otherwise. And that's so powerful. That's what they do, right?
Right. Right, and I think that, again, is the thing that sets the My House operation apart, is this willingness, again, to partner, but also this willingness to look at a true end game. There are far too many social service programs out there that are not necessarily all that concerned about what you're talking about, which is the true termination of homelessness.
Right.
And an operation like My House where, as Isaac was saying, we have these wraparound services, we have all these partners on site, but the goal is ultimately financial self-sufficiency, really, when you break it all the way down. And we have put young people through, you know, My House gets them housed, Nine Star gets them their high school diploma and then helps them get into Northern Industrial Training, for example, to be a service oiler, and then they parlay that into a job on the slope where they're making 65K a year or whatever. And so they come into us as a homeless ex, you know, a felon, ex-con, all this stuff. We can address all of those issues and then get them to that ultimate end game. It may take a while. It's not going to be, you know, a month, but it could take a little while. But the end game is that young person never again will need to come back to a social service program and be a burden on those funds. They're going to be actually contributing to the tax base to continue those funds. And so we really like to see those types of outcomes where it's not the same person that we saw last year still here. That person has moved on and is successful. And all of the partners are working towards that. So the shared vision of where we want these young people to be is another key element of why it's successful.
It's not a matter of the business is homelessness and business is good. It's like, no, we would actually like business to be very bad. Like when business is bad, that means that we're doing our job correctly. Now, there are plenty of outside factors that will contribute to business continuing to be stable, unfortunately. But as far as what we can affect in our scope, the goal is for us to ruin our job security. If we could all be unemployed because that means that everyone else was employed and we would have to find other jobs, then that's the goal. And will we ever get to that point? I don't know. I would like to think so. And maybe we will and maybe we won't. But while there is this problem, while business is good, unfortunately, we can be doing everything that we can and working with those other people that are part of that same sector of the economy.
But again, Isaac, I love what you're saying, but I also think there is an end game potential where all these homeless prevention programs would be truly that homeless prevention. And it's no longer you are homeless and we've got to figure out how to help you. That it would shift to a prevention model where you would no longer have these large numbers of people actively living on the street. And the My House model with the slogan of hand up, not a handout, is really something that needs to be infused, I think, through all of social service thought processes. I am disappointed when I see, oh, we served, you know, some organizations served 1,000 people last year. Oh, and by the way, they're serving the exact same 1,000 people again this year. And guess what? They're going to serve the same exact people the year after that.
Right.
My House, with the hand up, not a hand out moniker, is we're going to serve you to the best of our ability 100% and get you to where you need to be. So you're not on our rolls the next year, right?
Yes.
Next year, we're going to be saying, here's where that particular client is now. They are, you know, working as a service oiler up on the slope or whatever it happens to be. They have progressed out of this poverty and homelessness situation. And Michelle has the stats to back that up. But again, how does that happen? It happens philosophically with a hand up, not a hand out. And then with all of the partners having that shared vision for where we want these young people to end up, being financially self-sufficient and successful and self-sufficient of mind and body as well.
Mm-hmm. I really love that. And I think there's I had two thoughts while you were talking. One is that I think people underestimate the potential, particularly of youth. They think that they're not capable. They think that they're not ready. They can't do it. And sometimes they have to do it to demonstrate to themselves that they can do it and that they're ready. Sometimes we've got young people right now in our program that grew up taking care of younger siblings. And they've been taking care of everyone else their whole life. And when we say, okay, stop, now take care of yourself, that's a really, really big chasm for them to leap over. But recognizing that if I can take care of my six younger siblings, perhaps I can take care of myself if I stop the madness, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a piece of it too. You know, Linda Chud does the empowerment piece and has so many young peer supports in the building, you know, Michelle Parker, Julia, that are all saying just do the healthy things. Do the healthy things. Don't keep going back and doing what you were doing before and expect it to work or to work differently. And I really think that's a piece, too, is finding people in your community that are volunteers, that are passionate, that have the words and the care and the concern and dedication to be able to walk that walk with them. To help them get out of that. It's real easy to talk about what programs should be doing. I would encourage every listener here to think about engaging in a program in your community that you could contribute something to. Maybe you teach a class on how to write a budget or how to buy a used car. We've got a guy that comes and teaches kids how to take care of their car, change the oil. There are so many different things that are needed by youth who grow up in disadvantaged situations, and they're excited about it, and it brings value to them. I feel like that's a key piece of what makes my house different. We invite all these community members in, and it's like you said before, Roger, there's, you know, we find a kid that has a need, and if we can't fill the need, we try to go find someone right. that can. Who's our partner for this? You know, who can fix this? Who can do this piece? And we're struggling through right now the development of a treatment program for human trafficking survivors because no one's doing that work. Mm-hmm. So we're having to build that. And it's really an odd, you know, my brain doesn't do that. My brain goes and looks for somebody right. who's already doing it to try to find a solution. And so I'm struggling a little bit with that. And I think we've got some good anchors in place for the program, but it doesn't feel natural. And while we're partnering with Priceless in Anchorage to put mm-hmm. those pieces in place and Alaska Housing through a DJJ grant that they have, I think there's great potential, but it feels odd.
Right. But I think also it should be said that this is not a situation that exists in the MATSU. And so somebody has to step up to the plate to resolve that issue. And right. so you're working with the right partners who've got experience doing that. And here's just another piece to the overall preventing homelessness puzzle with right. these young people out here. And so with the other partners you have already established, eventually that will just be easily integrated into everything else we're doing out here. And so I'm not concerned about it at all. Oh. You're much more concerned than I am. But I also will say one of the reasons my house is so effective is the tremendous outpouring of support from the entirety of the MATSU Valley. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that the MATSU realized there was this issue with homeless youth, and how do we solve it? We want to solve it, but we don't want to have some big giant shelter where they're just hanging out and then they're wandering around all day begging for money or whatever the heck it happens.
Right.
And then you came along with this innovative, outside-the-box idea of, yeah, hand up, not a handout. Here's this thing. And, you know, I'm not out here in this office all that much. I have a full-time staff that is. But when I'm here, every time without fail, two or three different members of the community will be bringing in either some sort of donation, clothing donation, or here's a check, or here we did a fundraiser for you guys, and here's this stuff and that stuff. And just looking at the building itself, where so much of this was designed and created and built by volunteer people and things like that. And so really, when you look at the success of my house, it's really the success of the MATSU as a whole community coming together to do this. And if you can replicate that in other communities that want to address an issue this serious, you can do it and you can make a huge impact. We have had kids be successful here that if you saw them when they walked in this door, you would be like, there is no way this kid is going to be successful.
That
no
is way. So true.
And they are so successful now that they're making more money than me, probably.
Right.
You know, but it's not necessarily always a financial success. It's I am now happy with who I am in my life right now. My needs are taken care of, and I'm feeling good about my career and my education and the relationships I've built that are all healthy. That's where we want to get these kids to go. And again, that's where my house gets them.
Well, and so much of the prevention aspect, Roger, in close partnership with that hand up and not a handout idea and ideology that we champion, it's also just the demographic that we're working with. When you're working with younger people, you know, we're not talking about chronic homelessness. You're not as set in your ways. It's easier to change negative behaviors. And also it's that prevention piece when we're talking about transitioning from the goal is transitioning from how can we help you because you're homeless to just how can we prevent you from becoming homeless? We're serving a demographic where so much of the negative experiences in their life come from generational trauma. Like they didn't, no 17-year-old, most 17-year-olds at least, aren't putting themselves into the position of being homeless. There's something that has happened in their home life, in their personal life, that has brought them to this position where they are now sleeping in a car or couch surfing or living on the streets. And working with youth, you're able to give them the tools to not only lift themselves out of homelessness, but then also now that they're in a healthy position, their children are never, and their children's children are never going to have to experience what they have mm-hmm. just as part of their daily life for however many years.
That's a really good point, Isaac, because part of what I really believe that we do is prevent trauma. And trauma, we know, is has a direct link to homelessness. If we can prevent homelessness, we're preventing them from being sexually assaulted. We're preventing them from being in situations where they become addicted. We're preventing them from being trafficked. And all those pieces add up in the end game to preventing them from being homeless long term. One of my favorite stories is a young man that one of our first clients that went through Nine Star over to NIT for a welding certificate. We sent two brothers, and one of the brothers made some really incredible choices and ended up working on the slope for a company doing welding there. And I saw him probably 2 years after he finished his welding certificate at the Alaska State Fair. And I saw him from a little ways away and wasn't sure it was him. And he walked right over, you know, he had nice boots on, mm-hmm. kind of fancy boots on, and a nice jacket with the company that he worked for on the slope logo on it. And we chatted for a few minutes, and he had a pretty girl with him that he introduced me to. And I just told him I was so proud of him, and I was so excited. That was early on. I mean, you know, 1 or 2 years in maybe to trying to make this work in terms of the really big job training certificate career kinds of things. And when he walked away, he kind of hugged me and said into my ear, thank you so much. I'll never be homeless again. and he kind of said it like he was promising. Right. But it was so moving for me. It was such an amazing transition for this kid that grew up without running water, without, I mean, nothing but wood for heat, finished high school on a wing and a prayer, did not have college dreams, and was, I think when they came in, they were living in someone's garage. Mm-hmm. It was like a detached garage on the property that these two boys were living in. And to be able to see that kind of a transition, and about a year after I ran into him at the fair, my husband and I ran into him coming out of the grocery store with about as many grocery bags as you could possibly carry. And he was so excited. And what he said was, I'm taking these groceries to my house. I just bought a house. And I'm taking these to put them in my own kitchen. And that, you know, that was really, I got away from the situation before I started crying, right. Which, you know, so that's a big victory for me. I didn't weep in front of the kid, but, you know, my husband turned to me and said, my God, is that one of the homeless kids that you're helping? And I said, yeah. And he was like, wow, that's a whole different thing than I imagined. And I said, well, good, because I really want everybody to imagine that that's how we treat the youth in our community. If they have a dream, that it's a hand up, not a hand out. Mm-hmm. But that kid took the hand up that we gave him and ran with it. And he'll never be. You're right, Isaac. That young man will raise children in a home with running water and electricity and heat and lights. And they won't be right on the edge, all skirting the edge of extreme right. poverty. And so that's really, in my mind, when I think about what makes us different, we have the opportunity to do that for young people. And that's different.
Right. And I think with all of the different partners involved, there's always that, oh, we outside the box kind of idea where, oh, how do we help this kid? And one of the partners is like, oh, we can do that by doing this thing and that thing and the next thing. And you get them on their pathway, because when a young person says to you, a homeless young person says, hey, I really want to do this, you need to jump on that right away.
Yes.
Make whatever this is start to happen, because that could be that fork in the road where if as a social service provider, we jump on that right away, that kid is retired in Florida at some point,
yes,
right? Because you just take them down that road. If you don't and you delay and you say, I'll come back next week or 2 months from now or whatever, you've lost it, and they probably will remain as a homeless individual for an indefinite, potentially the rest of their life period of time. And so the ability to have that kind of flexibility and outside the box thinking and ability to do things right away.
Mm-hmm. You're so
right. You don't have to come back tomorrow. We're doing it now.
You're so right.
You know, how many times have we seen a kid come in saying, hey, I'm thinking about getting back into high school, and we're picking up the phone, calling the school right now.
Right,
hey, we're taking them over right now. Get them,
yep,
hooked up, blah, blah, blah. Fill out this paperwork. Go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Because when they have that idea, and a lot of these young people, they know what they're supposed to be doing. And it takes them a long time sometimes to come in and ask for that help. And
true.
So the second they're in there asking for that help, you go, you jump on it, you make it happen. And that's the other thing that makes my house so special in the realm of the social service programs. You don't have to pick a number when you walk in here. You don't have to come back on a Tuesday for some random orientation.
Right.
It's, oh, you're here in front of me right now. Let's make things happen.
Yeah. Let's solve the problems, mm-hmm, whatever they are. I really love that aspect of it for two pieces of this. One is the substance use disorder. If you don't have the ability to do that with someone who has a substance use disorder and they come to you and say, I'm ready to go to treatment, you know, if we have to say, we used to have to say, we've got 3 weeks to wait. And sometimes we couldn't keep them alive that long. Mm-hmm. In 2016, we lost 11 kids that were part of our program to overdoses. We could not keep them alive for long enough to get,
right,
an assessment. Now, we can almost always get an assessment within 24 hours. If we call at 8 o'clock in the morning, we can get them in by noon. That is life-changing and life-affirming. And it's the same thing with the job training. Sometimes they have a spark of inspiration, and you have to jump in, mm-hmm, that and run with them. Just sidle up to them and run.
Well, and it's especially important with drug treatment, because when that kid comes in and says, I'm ready for treatment, that usually means there's been a really horrible experience just a,
yes,
few hours ago or,
yes,
whatever, and now's the time to jump on that. And so, again, this is Michelle developing these partnerships where we all have this shared goal of making these kids successful. And so what used to be a three-week, three-month wait, whatever, now it's, no, we can fit your guy in today.
Yeah.
And just get this assessment rolling so we can make things happen. You know, the partnership with True North Recovery, Set Free Alaska, that is stuff that's been developed over years. And again, the kid comes in, you got to make stuff happen when they're there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm excited that we had the opportunity to visit again, Roger. I think that you have been such a critical piece of the My House journey. This is 10 years. In June, this is 10 years in our building,
oh,
and working together. So we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary celebration.
Do I get any sort of plaque?
I'm sure that you'll have a trophy and a plaque and golf clubs for the golf tournament.
Oh, nice. Yeah, this sport I don't play. But what the last thing I do want to say, though, to any other social service partners out there that are in the MATSU or other places that think they could provide a service and be of help to the youth that we work with here at the My House, reach out to Michelle or one of her staff and say, hey, here's what we do. Here's how we could help, because we're always looking to develop our partners who have this shared vision of solving the youth homeless crisis and moving these kids towards success.
So. And if you don't have homeless youth, you don't have homeless adults.
Right, exactly.
Right? We prevent that chronic, mm-hmm, homelessness. There was a Palmer City Councilwoman here for the meeting today, and she said, you know, I have some real concerns about Palmer. And I got to giggle a little bit as I told her that Palmer is the town that said, we don't want services for homeless youth here. Mm-hmm. And my response ultimately to community members was, then you'll have homeless adults. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of seeing that now. And that's not a criticism of Palmer necessarily. They're in our service arena. We go pick up kids and bring them over. But it does make a difference. If you provide homeless youth services, you have many, many less homeless adults, and if you have exit strategies for those youth.
Right, and that is the My House model to a T. Hand up, not a handout, exit strategy. The only time we want to see you again when we're done with you is when you come in just to hug us and say hi and have a cup of coffee or whatever and tell us how good you're doing.
We don't drop off a donation check. We just had and not from like a the selfish give us your money thing, but as an example, we had someone who was a long-term client from several years ago that came in clean and sober, had just graduated from his recovery program and dropped off like a $50 or $100 check. He was like, I made it. I have a job. I have a car. Thank you so much for helping me. I want to be a donor now. Yeah. And how affirming is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The day of the radio marathon last year, I was in tears because we had so many young people that were former clients drop off, just come through the drive-thru and hand a check out the window and say, I heard you on the radio. Thanks for what you did for me. And, you know, as a founder and director, that is hugely impactful. It's so good to see them healthy and strong, but it's also good to see them grateful mm-hmm. and proud in our community.
Yeah.
That's how we end homelessness.
Well, and I think also too, for those social service providers out there, we know it's rare to get that feedback from the youth we work with, the clients you may work with. And when it happens, you really do have to cherish that.
Yeah.
When youth are doing that, you know, not only are they giving back to My House, but they're giving back to the rest of the community as well. And they are now a productive, involved member of the community. If they've got kids of their own, you know that those kids are being raised properly and with the right frame of mind and things like that. So, when you don't hear from your clients all the time, that's okay, because sometimes that means they're doing just fine and they don't need to bother you anymore. But when they do come back, you really do need to cherish that.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Roger. Appreciate you. Honor you. Thank you for being with us all these 10 years.
Well, I am waiting for that plaque, so I better have
okay,
one.
Yeah, good. I'll take care of that.
Gene and Roger talk movies. On the finest podcast streaming services.
Yes,
next to
Gene and Roger. What was the one that you mentioned, Isaac, the Winnie the Pooh? Well,
Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Blood and Great what the heck?
Well, so Gene and Roger talk movies is all about our views on horror films. So it's not going to be ever talking about anything that's not a horror film, but it can be a lot of fun for certain people. We spoil the heck out of the movie. So if for some reason you want to see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, watch it first before you listen to the podcast. But enjoy it if you want.
Oh, it's so fun. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Isaac. That's all the time we have for today. The My House podcast is recorded at the My House studio in Wasilla, Alaska. Our producer and editor and Executive Communication Director.
Senior Executive Communication Director is
Isaac Smolden, title just earned in Juneau last week. I'm Michelle Overstreet. Until next time.